Welcome back to the Barely Professional podcast. My guest this week is Jennifer Glover, a PhD student at Loughborough University and also a very active member of the WES community. She talks about her experience as a female engineer and the importance of self-confidence in the industry. Hope you enjoy the episode. So, do you just want to give a quick introduction as to what you do and kind of your career path so far?
Okay. So, I'm Jennifer Glover. I am a PhD research student at Loughborough University. I'm in the aeronautical and automotive department, and I research soundproofing methods for jet engines. I had a very typical route, did maths and physics at A-level, went off straight off to university and did a master's at Loughborough in aeronautical engineering, and then did my PhD straight after that. And outside of university, I'm a volunteer for the Women's Engineering Society, and my main role is the student liaison officer. So I look after all of the university student members.
So what kind of inspired you to go into engineering and also to do so much outreach outside your actual studies?
So I chose engineering, like pretty much everyone else, because I really enjoyed and was good at maths and physics and wanted to apply it, make it more tangible, because as an engineer, you can design something. And for me, I design it and then I print it and it's physically in front of me when I test it. And that's really satisfying. And I feel like you can make a real difference as an engineer, particularly with my work. It's not just about making aircraft quieter. It's about the knock-on effects of the improved health for people that work and live near airports. I didn't really become involved in outreach until I went on placement. So I went on placement after my third year. And I think before then, there's a lot of pressure to, you know, just do the work and fit in. And actually, when I got into the workplace, I really noticed how big a problem of diversity was. So I went from an all-girls secondary school to essentially an all-boys school when I went into my degree. And you just, you know, you don't want to make a fuss. And then actually when you get in industry and realise that there are three women engineers in this entire building, you know, like 100 engineers, that it is a problem because you are isolated and people don't necessarily know how to work with you. And so that's when I became involved with Women's Engineering Society. I became a STEM ambassador. And it was really important for me to outreach as an engineer. Firstly, to educate on what engineers do, because a lot of people think I'm a mechanic, which is nothing wrong with, but it's not what I do. But also that actually engineering and STEM more generally isn't a male thing. Intelligence isn't a male thing. It's open to anyone that has an interest in it. And more than that, we really want everyone. We want a huge diverse group, because as engineers, we know that a diverse group is the best group.
Yeah, I completely get the coming from an all-girls school, because I really felt like even when I was at secondary school and I went to a grammar school, I wouldn't say anyone there was dumb, but there was this assumption that if you do engineering, it's very much like you fix things and you're very much that typical hands-on sort of engineer. And I think that's such a wrong misconception. It puts off so many people from doing the subject. Is that something you've found when you do your outreach work? Are there those sorts of assumptions that people have going into it?
Well, I think exactly the same as you. It was an all-girls grammar, so exactly, everyone's pretty smart. We're a science school as well. So at A-level, we had four full math classes. You know, that those women now have gone on into STEM subjects. But women, I think, are primarily pushed towards medicine, because you want to look after people, you care for people, medicine. Well, I want to look after people. I want to care for people. I want to do the best for people. And that's why I'm an engineer. I mean, initially, when you think you're good at sciences, you know, someone would have said to me, you thought I'm a doctor. Well, I'm incredibly squeamish. I've just had my flu jab and the fuss I made is incredible. So I would be a terrible doctor, but that's what I think you need to go into schools and say. So I was really good at this. I was never going to be a doctor because I would faint all the time. But actually, I can help a hell of a lot more people with the work I'm doing as an engineer. It's really caring and diverse, and just saying that, you know, that there are options. There are always options, where I think when you are good at sciences, you're told, you know, you can be a doctor And then if you're a boy, you're told you can be an engineer as well. I walk in when we do careers events, people generally get to choose what they want to do. And so as a woman, when I'm standing in front of this room of 16-year-olds, I can stand in front of rooms, you know, do 10 sessions a day and two of them have girls in. And then you challenge that. And I think because you challenge the boys in the room, they'll probably take it home and go, yeah, well, our engineer today was a woman, so you know, my little sister's good at maths, she can be an engineer as well. And actually visibility is such a big thing when it comes to careers in all aspects as well, not just engineering.
Do you have any advice for girls that are maybe like GCSE level or A level and feel like they're good at maths and physics but don't really know how to approach kind of going into engineering? Do you have any advice?
I think it's really about immersing yourself and involving yourself. So there was a person the year ahead of me who was doing engineering, and I asked her what books she'd read, what things she'd done, and so she gave me a list of books. So that's always a really good start. Find reading material that you're really interested in, because whilst you're still at school, if you're stuck, you can go and ask people. And actually, if you show an interest, like I did, some of the teachers started to give me content as well. When it comes to things like work experience, the best thing you can do is ask people, because normally they will have, if they're a big company, they might have a work shadowing scheme themselves. If they're not, they might go, oh, you know, we can have someone in the summer for a week, and start building up that experience, because you'll learn pretty quickly if it's something you're interested in. If, you know, if you're there for a week and not a single thing interests you, then you know, try something else. But I think particularly if you are looking for the apprentice and the university route as an engineer, they are very competitive. So if you are a less traditional background, having that experience can really help you and stand out, because people might question why you're doing it. And if you go, you know, I've done 2 weeks work shadowing and I loved it, you'll kind of back off a bit. So just immerse yourself in it and ask. Wes does a lot of work for under 18s, and I know the London cluster actually do work shadowing, and they've done it for 2 years now, and other regions are going to do that. So, you know, give it a quick Google and there's probably someone, whether it's Wes, Wise, Stemets, that will offer you some experience in it, and that's the best way to know if you like it.
Yeah, so for me personally, when I decided I wanted to do engineering, I went on a couple of residential courses, and that sort of practical experience in meeting other people that wanted to do the same thing I did really inspired me to actually actively pursue a career, because it made it a bit more real and I kind of started to understand a bit more about what you actually do, rather than it just being, I'm good at maths and physics, I could go be an engineer. What kind of made you decide that was definitely what you wanted to do?
You get a lot of information thrown at you when you pick your GCSEs and your A-levels, and I kind of knew I knew I wanted to do something science-based. And I did, you know, those online quizzes and stuff that the school present that matches you, your skill set, with different options. And that's what I did. And then that's how aeronautical engineering came up. And then I read about it and thought, well, yeah, really interested. And it was sort of by chance I fell upon that one. And there are other services. So women in science and engineering wise, they do a People Like Me campaign. And that's really good, because rather than having this traditional set of attributes that can actually be quite gendered, so you know, determined to competitive, are seen as quite male terms, and they'll lead you to science. What this campaign has done is it's used less gendered words, and perhaps words that are considered more feminine, and it helps you work out what type of character you are, and then it aligns to work. So that's a much better method than what I used, but that's how I ended up in it. It was chance, but when I did my research on it, I thought, yeah, this is brilliant. Looked at the modules and you know, couldn't wait to start.
So in terms of outreach work, what's been your favourite things to have done? What's really like made you feel the most fulfilled, I suppose?
So for my outreach, I have two different divisions, basically, before they choose to be an engineer and after they do. So before they do, I've, you know, do from sort of 7 to 18, and there's nothing more fulfilling than, you know, putting in a presentation, really thinking about how am I going to communicate this and is it really engaging, and then putting on a session. And I went to a school where they have mixed ability classes, so they don't do tiering or anything like that. And a student afterwards spoke to the organizer to say thank you to me, because he had learning difficulties like myself, and he didn't really feel that school was for him. He didn't really feel engaged. But in that session, because I'd really thought about how to engage everyone, he said he'd learned loads, was really interested in it, he's going to research more. And so just helping that one person really find a connection with education was really, really I felt really good about it, and it really inspired me to do more and to make Outreach more accessible. And for the post engineers, I suppose, where I look after my university students, helping manage the university group's board, which obviously you're now a member of, it's wonderful to see how much the board has progressed. So I was the inaugural chair in, I think it was 2017-18, and in 3 years, you've done so much more than we ever do. You've got this much more presence. People are so much more active. The ambitions this cohort has got, it makes you very proud of where it's come. And I think as if we work on any project, you want to make sure that the people take it over do a better job, and that is exactly what you lot are doing. So it's a really brilliant thing to see its progression.
No, it's been really nice to be on the board as well, because you have that support from other people, and they're all such ambitious and like-minded individuals that it's really inspiring to work with them, actually. You mentioned earlier that you have a disability, and what's it like doing engineering or studying engineering with a disability? Has it been harder, or have you felt like you've been held back more?
So for the benefit of the listeners, I suppose, I'm autistic, dyslexic, and I have something called Mears Island syndrome, or visual stress. So you won't be able to see, but I have these fabulous orange glasses. I was diagnosed with dyslexia really early, and I come from a family of dyslexics, so that support system was always there for me. And certainly through secondary school, I saw how hard my parents had to fight to get me help. I think if you're lucky enough to be really talented in a subject and not necessarily struggle academically, you sometimes don't get the help you really need. So I suppose it's like the analogy of a duck. It looks like everything's okay, but you're having to work twice as hard as everyone. And so when it comes to particularly higher education, there's nothing, it makes me cringe when people say, oh, so-and-so's dyslexic, they couldn't go to university. It's utter nonsense. If people can't achieve that level, it's because they've not been the correct support. And unfortunately, I think you have to be responsible for the support you need. You have to go in straight away and ask for it. And actually, the university services are generally fantastic. But if you don't tell them you need help, you won't get help. So I think from that side, I got everything I needed. And it made me feel confident in going, knowing that everything was in place. You know, I got my extra time. I got my separate room for exams, which makes a huge difference for myself, particularly with the autism. The anxiety around exams is overwhelming. So being in that much calmer environment is particularly helpful for myself. I think the difficulty is when you start to deal with staff. So I'm sure it's similar for people, anyone that has any hidden difference or disability. You have to declare it all the time. And sometimes people have a don't ask, don't tell policy, which meant that I ran into the problems with, obviously my spelling is poor. And even if I proofread and try really hard with a report, there's going to be mistakes in it. And on this piece of coursework I tried really hard in, I got accused of being lazy because I had some basic spelling errors in it. And that is like a knife to the heart for a dyslexic. I'm not lazy, I just can't do it. And then having to go through that was very challenging, having to speak to them, explain the difference, and then go, okay, well, you know, what can we do about it? That it takes a lot of resolution in yourself to do that, because you make yourself stand out. And then obviously, you know, you have to tell, if you're working in a group, you have to tell them what's wrong, what's difficult. You just have to build a lot of confidence and resilience, because it may be really hard then, but you're going to have exactly the same problem when you work in industry, and you're going to have to do it again. But as I said, there's lots of services and support if you ask. It's like anything, if you've got a problem with it, you just have to ask and fight for the support you need, because there's probably lots of people that need support. And if you're not making any noise, no one's going to come to you.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme actually for everyone, or like females and minorities in engineering as well. If you want support, if you want help, if you ask, there's so many opportunities. I found literally emailing people, even with this podcast, the amount of people that I've just had to drop an email to, and they've been so willing to help and offer advice. And I think sometimes people are quite scared to do that because they think someone's going to say no, but honestly, that is the worst thing anyone's going to say. They're just going to say no and you move on and
yeah. I'm not saying I'm everyone's first choice for support, but I can't ever remember saying no to someone. If I couldn't help them immediately, I'd be like, you know, this person can do it and pass them on. And I think it's because no one gets to their position without help, and people forget that. You know, they think, oh, you know, so-and-so, the CEO of whatever massive company, oh, they must have done it by themselves. No, they ask for help. So it's not weakness or embarrassing. You know, when I've asked for support, no one's ever made me feel, you know, stupid for doing so.
I suppose it's along the same lines, but what's been the biggest struggle for you, do you think, being a female engineer?
I think the biggest struggle is confidence. So before I went out on placement, I was determined just to fit in. You know, I wouldn't go for the female only support because, you know, should they be getting extra help and all this kind of stuff? And you get these cliches sort of build up in your head that, you know, you're going to get a free ride because you're a female engineer and all this kind of nonsense. And actually getting the confidence to go, no, you know, I'm not taking female support because I want an extra step on the ladder. It's about creating this equality. There's that brilliant image that there's three people standing behind a fence trying to watch a baseball game. If you give them all a crate, it doesn't mean they can all see. You have to give a different size to the different height of person. So I think I underestimated how isolating it can be to be the minority in a room, because it's just never happened before. But it wasn't until I went on industry and realised, you know what, I am a competent engineer. I'm good at my job. You know, I'm holding my own with these people who are actually qualified and I'm not. And so then when I went back, I was like, I don't feel embarrassed for asking for female-focused help, because you know what, when you're in industry and you're on your own and everyone's gone to play football and you can't come, you'll be going, you know, it doesn't matter because I'm going to go chat to my community of people, which in my case is Wes. It took being thrown in at the deep end for me to have that confidence in my own abilities, which I, you know, try to instill in other people.
Have you ever had any comments from male peers or male colleagues about the fact that you're a female engineer?
So when it comes to university, I have the comment that I'm sure every female engineer's had, and that is, you know, you'll get the job because you're female, like they're filling quotas or some nonsense like that, and it just doesn't make business sense. You wouldn't employ someone that wasn't good enough. Like, it's just a waste of money. So you have that and you kind of just run along with it. But actually, that's pretty insulting. It's saying that you're not good enough for the job. You've only been picked because you've got prettier hair than everyone else. It's ridiculous. I have experienced more levels of sexism. What particularly stands out is whilst I was on placement, I went to the Christmas meal. And so we had two sites, and people from the other site were sat on this table, and we had a mix of from my site and from their site, and I'd taken my partner with me. And the first thing was they immediately spoke to him and asked him what he did at the company, and he says, well, I don't work for them. So that was, you know, pretty bad start. And rather than apologize, it was, oh, that was sexist, like, you, yeah, but you could, you know, it wasn't, they put me on the back foot. But then they were trying to create conversation, and they were talking about someone in my office, not at least I know them. And then they made quite a strong sexual comment and a very crude gesture. You know, and I'm, you know, 21, the youngest in the room, and it really offended me. It made me feel really small and quite unsafe in their company because it was so inappropriate. And it took me, I think it was like 4 months before I told my line manager, because I didn't think I could say anything. And he was absolutely furious, and they ended up having to have extra training. And I think it doesn't matter how minor it is if it really upsets you and makes you uncomfortable. I mean, we left straight after the meal because they made me feel so uncomfortable and so unsafe in their presence. You can report it. You shouldn't just have to put up with it. I'm sure it's the same for any kind of discrimination. It's not banter if you don't find it funny. It's bullying, and you shouldn't just have to put up with it. Because, you know, it's no skin off their nose to not say it, but you have to have a lot of confidence to stand up for yourself and say that. And I think that's where you need these communities, whatever professional institute it may be, to to ask someone, go, is this okay? And then go, yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah.
You can speak to someone.
A lot of people, a lot of girls may be scared to go into engineering because they're worried they're gonna have these comments thrown at them, or people are gonna say things like, oh, you don't look like you should be doing engineering or something like that. Do you have any advice for them, or anything that you use that you say back whenever someone throws that at you?
Well, I think it's for all of those out there, every other woman has had exactly that fear. My fear about reporting this was it would affect my career prospects. And if your line manager is a decent person, it shouldn't. And if it does, you can always keep going to someone who is decent and report it. Normally, I just ignore it because I think it depends what situation you're in. You don't want to start having a shouting match perhaps with someone that you're going to be stuck in a meeting for. It's very difficult to judge, and it's very personal. Now, because I've been working with Wes for such a long time and know the statistics and know all things like that, I would probably just call them out. So that was a really sexist comment, wasn't it? And then they'll go, yeah, it was. And I was like, I think you should probably apologise. And then they do. But it's very personal. I think, unfortunately, the easiest one to reply to is if they say you're going to get the job because you're a woman. It wouldn't make business sense. No one's done that before. No one's going to do it again. Yeah, it's just easy to challenge and go, you know, that was sexist, wasn't it? I mean, you challenge, I feel like I would challenge a different type of discrimination and say, you know, that was homophobic or that was racist. You can say it for sexism as well. And I, as someone with learning difficulties, I challenge that as well. And go, you know, you can't make that, you know, can't just say that you're dyslexic because you can't spell very well. That's completely irrelevant.
So just to finish, do you have any final words of advice for anyone that wants to do engineering, just in general?
I think for anyone, whatever stage of your career, try and get as much experience and exposure. Connect with your engineering networks, you know, whichever professional one most aligns to you, and ask for support. There are thousands of engineers that really want to make it better for the next generation, and they are more than willing to mentor, give advice, give work shadowing, but they can't give it to you unless you ask.
Enjoyed the episode. I found it really interesting talking to Jennifer about her time as an engineer and all the things that she's gone through. As always, share the episode if you enjoyed it, and I hope you tune in next week.